welcome to the new Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forvar on this beautiful Monday morning. Thanks for tuning in. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning. How are we doing?
Doing well. We got a new intro song for the 6 o'clock listeners that are hearing us live. Podcast listeners, you'll never know. Get up early and listen. Starting fresh with a new tune, new vibes.
We went with the instrumental, too. I thought we were going to hear a little Laura Branigan, right?
No.
But that's okay.
That's for you to use your voice for.
That's when you know to step in is when. Should have been
Glory, Glory.
There we go. Or we can just have Brett Hull's version, which is just as good.
It's basically what I would sound like on a Monday morning if I tried to sing anyway. It's a beautiful weekend for many of us in the city of Toronto, including, most importantly, myself, as the elevator in my building, one of three, was restored service.
Really?
After trying times of 4 full days of no elevator service in my apartment building, where I'm on the 28th floor, I was finally restored one serviceable elevator, in which yesterday I used twice and waited a, how long do you think I waited? A combined up, down amount of time.
Sorry, up, down, up, down?
Well, like waiting for the elevator to go down and up, and then once again down and up. 4 times of waiting. I timed it on my stopwatch on my phone.
How many people live in your building? Like, what
are
we talking
about? I'm on the 28th floor out of 35, and there's one elevator in service.
I don't know. It's got to be 15 minutes per, no?
Give me a total. I'm not doing math.
You can't figure that one out? 15 times 4? 60 minutes, 1 hour.
It was 52 minutes.
Okay.
That's ridiculous,
that's bad.
Justin.
That's bad. I mean, I was on the positive, though. I was like, they already got it back up. It's pretty impressive. The people that grinded away to make sure
the
that
grinders.
There's at least some sort of service for you folks.
See, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. I'm just giving the information out that now you are now going to wait 57 minutes.
I tend to lean on the side that you shouldn't have even been waiting. You should have just kept grinding on the stairs. You
Justin.
Are only a few years removed from professional sports.
No. As I said, I was humbled every time I took the stairs. On Friday afternoon, I had to take an Epsom salt bath because my calves, it's not even funny. My calves
yes,
are so shot that I was walking.
Why is it just your calves?
Just my, I must not use the proper muscles.
Yeah, like you got to work on your
gait. I'm not firing the glutes
you gotta work on your
when
gait.
I'm going up the stairs.
Should be your quads.
No, my calves. I couldn't even like put leggings on. It hurt the pressure of, it was really bad. So I took an Epsom salt bath on Friday to try to soothe my muscles. Anyway.
Did that work out?
No, I'm really sore this morning. But now there's an elevator. So big news for Ailish this weekend.
I imagine there was no wait this morning.
No, that's the perks of leaving your apartment at mm-hmm. the 5 o'clock hour as I ripped right down the elevator. It was beautiful. Okay, so big positive for me. Feeling really good. Blue Jays turn around. It was a really tough start to their road trip. You always have Manoah to count on. Big mm-hmm. positive there. And the Maple Leafs played. That was also exciting because I got to be there at those games. We'll talk about that afterwards. We have Tim Leeper on the show today. Brent Gunning, who was there at the game. And then our buddy Ross Tucker, get an update on that food spread mm-hmm. that he was highly anticipating last time he was on the show last Monday. But so are the Jays. I cannot stress enough how important the next 3 days are here in Toronto. It's probably
important for
the Toronto Blue Jays.
Okay.
And Aaron Judge. But this is feels like do or die in terms of a lot of things on your shoulders.
Really?
I do feel so.
Okay. Explain.
Because the Blue Jays are still in position to kind of control their destiny. And you're going to go here this stretch against the Yankees with Aaron Judge, who last night they got rained out. They waited a long time, and you messaged me saying they're going to be tired.
Oh, did they end up finishing the game?
No, they didn't. They ended up rain delaying, and then they won because they were up 2-0 past
inning.
the fifth inning. So they're coming in late. The Jays are in this period of a couple games here at home, Yankees, Red Sox, where they can help control if they're going to get that number one spot in the wild card, where they get home field advantage, which has been something we've talked about for weeks now. And obviously, John Schneider is very high on finding a way to get that home field advantage, so much so that maybe Alek Manoah wouldn't be your game one starter. We'll obviously get into that after seeing his performance. But the Yankees, rivals, Aaron Judge about to make history, Looney Dogs on Tuesday. There's just a lot riding on the next couple games. I'm super excited for it, but I think that the playoff implications alone and what you can do in three games and then the Red Sox series can really be dynamic going into next week when we start the show on Monday. Like, we could be in a completely different spot.
We could be. Everything could be sorted. We might have very little to talk about because we kind of know exactly where everything's going to stand. Or everything could be, as you mentioned, sent into flux. I do, like, when you said it, I was like, yeah, because, you know, Blue Jays, Roger Sanders is going to kind of be center of the baseball universe for a couple of days because of Aaron Judge and the tour that, or the circus,
it's
I guess, that he'll
here.
Bring to town. It seems like that's something that would happen here. And, you know, we'll try to profit off that at some point. But my worry is that we're kind of, you know, we're turning into the part of the starting rotation that is problematic. Mm-hmm. And we still have, you know, Kevin Gausman will start the series and we can be pretty confident in that. But then you're likely going to a Mitch White start and then you're going to Jose Berríos. And it really is, the performance is dictated. And we saw it in the Tampa Bay Rays series, where the performance is dictated by the strength of the starting pitcher. You put your worst foot forward to start the series. And then guess what? The guys you can probably count on to win games at the Trop, if we're all worried about that.
Exactly.
Guess what Alek Manoah and Ross Stripling did? They went into the Trop won games. And if they could do that in a postseason series, that's all you need, right? So it all, like, you know, the Blue Jays have managed to have a tremendous September despite up and down starting pitching. 16-8 overall. What do you think the record is in non-Mitch White starts in September? I mean, it's
about how many games they play?
16-8.
Oh.
So if you just take out the Mitch White starts, I mean, I'm just basically asking you to guess.
I think they've probably lost 4 Mitch White starts.
3. So 16-5. So whenever, I mean, we're talking about almost 80%. But the problem is it's almost a guaranteed loss when he's out there. Mm-hmm. At least it has been of late. So you're operating with really 4 starting pitchers, one of which has been highly, highly inconsistent. The other 3 you can really count on. But with that, when you turn it over, you leave yourselves vulnerable every 4 and 5 days, if you want to put it that way. And they're going to be, at this point in the series, vulnerable when, you know, we get into the meat of the series. So tonight's a big one. Kevin Gausman, if he can put the Blue Jays' best foot forward, at least give them something to work on, then, you know, the Blue Jays will be in a good spot. But I didn't like looking into it as much as you, because I'm kind of feeling comfortable about where they are.
I can never feel comfortable.
Certainly after winning the, like, they could have been really bad after this weekend.
They start a road trip 1-3, and they find a way to turn it around and win games that they need to win, which is something the Blue Jays have found throughout the season.
But they could have been, you know, the Rays could have control of the wild card chase. We could be talking about desperation mode where they have to go on a run and maybe have to sacrifice and make concessions games 161, 162. Or they just play themselves out of that, which we thought might even be a blessing in disguise if they actually got to that point. But they do have control. They've got to keep winning games, of course.
They need to win 4 games. That's their magic number right now.
Magic number 4 just to make the playoffs, right? So that's what a Baltimore losses. Like, they're in. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
Don't jinx it.
But we do have to worry about Tampa Bay still.
Yes.
And we have to worry about what Aaron Judge could potentially do over the next 3 games against potentially subpar starting pitching.
So Blue Jays find a way to turn around this tougher road trip, but they still lose the tiebreaker to the Rays, which I think will be a significant point down the road when we talk about how these things shake out. They were 7-8 against Tampa going into this weekend. They needed to go 3-1. Now Tampa owns the tiebreaker in a 10-9 edge. So that will come into play in a tiebreaker scenario. And also the Mariners hold the tiebreaker over the Blue Jays. So 2 things to consider when you're looking at the standings, where the Blue Jays are still up. They're up 2 games on the Rays, 2.5 games on the Mariners for that top wild card spot. But in case things go poorly, those are 2 things to consider when we're trying to, like, this is going to be the conversation all week. Who's where? What's this going to play out like? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a factor to consider. I thought so much about home field advantage when I watched the Manoah start, because doesn't care where he's pitching. And if he's going to be the guy that starts game one and you're playing at the Trop, he had one of his best games ever on the road. And then I looked at the stats and I was thinking that maybe it's such a significant difference in terms of Blue Jays on the road and Blue Jays at home. They have like a winning percentage of 0.573 at home and 0.551 on the road. Is that enough that you want to not have Alek Manoah starting game one to get that fraction of a home percentage better when you see Alek Manoah on the road be as dominant as he was and Ross Stripling be as dominant as he was? Jose Berríos, question mark, after this weekend. But those two guys didn't seem to factor into the Trop curse.
I mean, I think it's more about who's on the mound. I think it always has been more about who's on the mound. I was frankly shocked when we left the studio because we were pretty staunch in our take Friday. I believe it was Friday.
It was just us at that point, though.
And then I'm driving home and hearing Blair and Barker thinking, no, they're making the right call by Manoah, game 162. I'm like, really?
I don't feel like I'm on board more about baseball
than you and I will ever know combined. And I'm like, there is no way. And I'm thinking about it all day. And I'm like, I can't get there. Mm-hmm. I just cannot get there. And then seeing Manoah do what he did on Saturday just reaffirmed everything that we were talking about. It's, yeah, the Blue Jays record, but you're looking at the whole sample. Of course, they're going to be a little bit better at home. And what they
Roger Sunders at home, too, in the playoffs.
What they were saying is it's a different
bird. You can't calculate that.
When, you know, Roger Center is just a different, completely different place, completely different atmosphere, something that could maybe help an opponent cower in fear a little bit or make them grip the bat, you know, whatever. I definitely buy into that. Mm-hmm. But the strongest thing, the strongest factor in any of it is starting pitching, quality starting pitching. And if you leave your best starting pitcher on the bench throughout the entire postseason, you will live to regret it. And Manoah and Stripling just proved that they can go in the Trop and win. And guess what ballpark doesn't have an atmosphere when the playoffs roll around?
The Trop.
Maybe a little enhanced. But it's still that circus tent looking thing. That doesn't give you, it doesn't give you much. There might be a little bit, but nothing that should, you know, strike fear in the heart of Alek Manoah. Not that anything really would. So again, we could probably, I hope we get to the point where we're not still debating this for the next 9 days, 10 days.
Well, that's the thing. Is it the next,
but we're probably, we might get to that point
the next
where it's
5 days
relevant.
Of baseball could help us know where we stand.
Yeah,
the definitely. Hope is that it's not still a question mark come that Baltimore series, because I don't want to see the decision needing to be made on game 162 or I guess 160 if you're going to shuffle the rotation to have Manoah be that guy that needs to get home field advantage. I just hope that this is why this is even more of an impactful series, is if you get 2 out of 3 against the Yankees, you start that Red Sox series strong, you're putting yourself in the position to control where you start your postseason, hopefully.
The more, and the Rays are going on the road. They're not playing another game at the Trop, I believe, all year.
I think they have a lighter schedule too.
I think it's, we'll have check it, pull it up here while I'm making my point. But I just feel like I do think like it's more likely than not that we are talking about this through until the end.
Rays have a tough schedule. It was the Mariners that had the light schedule. That helps.
Who do they have?
Guardians, Astros.
That's really tough.
And then Red Sox.
Are the Astros playing for anything? They're just setting up the rotation, but they have so many quality starting pitchers, it doesn't even matter. So the Rays have to keep winning, obviously, for this to be a discussion. But the Jays have to keep winning too. So if you lose 2 of 3 to the Yankees, immediately, you know, the lead might be cut down to 1. And if the lead's cut down to 1 with 6 games left, all bets are off. And they're gonna have to actually consider moving the pieces around to make sure that they can have Manoah for game 162 if they so choose. I hope they reconsider. I hope it doesn't get to that point. Even if they lose all 3 games against the Yankees, they lose their series lead. It slips away.
And you know,
you don't have to make that decision anyway.
Mariners play the Rangers, the Athletics, and the Tigers.
It seems like things are going to stay bunched. I've forgot. I'm probably making the mistake. I've forgotten about the Mariners. Like, they're there. But they're there. So they're going to have to keep winning. Or they keep losing and they don't put themselves in that position. But
don't
again,
go in the middle.
So much. Yeah. And it's going to be in the middle. That's how it works. It's not going to be in any either end of the extreme. These 2 teams, or these 3 teams, again, I did it again, are going to keep, you know, sharing one, winning two, dropping one, and they're going to end up being very tightly bunched unless something extreme happens, which, again, is probably less likely.
So Alek Manoah Saturday, his season high 133 pitches. When he went out for that seventh inning, I think everybody was a little bit surprised. But he's the guy that probably wants the ball. He's not going to argue. Put me back out there. Seven shutout innings. Throwing on an extra day of rest, which clearly is effective, which would be something nice to set up for game one of the wild card series if you had that opportunity, because it clearly paid off. Seven innings pitched, four hits, zero earned runs, eight strikeouts, 113 pitches.
I would rather prioritize that.
Sorry, 113 pitches, 133. That's crazy. 50th career start. Becomes the fastest Blue Jay pitcher to ever reach the 300 strikeout mark. Post game too. Killer quotes. We got his post game soundbite, which I'm pretty sure will be clipped into the Blue Jays playoff montage.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've dreamed of my whole life, right here. This is what we work for. This is what all the offseason training, all the everything that goes on through the season, the ups and downs, this is what it's for right now, this stretch. So, been on that mound, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I feel amazing. So for all the haters to say I'm slowing down, good luck.
Oh, for all the haters that say I'm slowing down.
Imagine leaving him on the bench for a three game.
Good luck.
Series.
Yeah. I don't know. Glad we don't have to make those decisions, Justin, because it's going to come down to what's more important. And for us, we know what's more important, but we're not the coaching staff. So Manoah, easy to feel confident about, no doubt about it. Yesterday, Ross Stripling with a bounce back game. Last time he against the Phillies, not an ideal Ross Stripling start. Then we quickly shifted to the narrative of, is Jose Berríos your number three? Then Jose Berríos had his game, and we quickly shift to, is Ross Stripling your number three? And what he did yesterday, seven innings pitch, six hits, three strikeouts. The bullpen, though, comes in and pitches the final four innings of Sunday's game. Zach Pop, Adam Simber, Trevor Richards, and Yusei Kikuchi scoreless through the final four. Hey, that's something you need this week to be lights out, because tonight's Gausman. Tomorrow, we think it's Mitch White.
I believe so.
And then Jose Berríos, those two to end your massive series against the Blue, against the Yankees, is very important for those four guys I just mentioned.
Yeah, but that's the garbage time crew, right?
Still, they might have an opportunity. They might be in there.
I mean, they're going to need some of these guys to do something. That's my whole thing about where the Blue Jays are right now, though. It's like you have a very small collection of guys that you really, really trust. And that's why we're in the conversation about the starting pitching. Mm-hmm. That's why we worry about the bullpen. That's why we worry about, you know, maybe offensively if they can all get it going at the right time. But it just seems like you have only a small group to choose from. And then when you have the opportunity, when you're leading, what was it, 6-1 or whatever it was, mm-hmm. you just run all the guys out who are at the bottom end of the
get the confidence up, Justin.
Of the bottom end of the list of players that are going to come out of the bullpen. And they get it done, that's great. But it's a low leverage situation.
100%.
We're going to see Yusei Kikuchi in high leverage. None of us are going to feel good about it.
But there was a point in time where we never felt confident in any situation with Yusei Kikuchi.
Well, we haven't once at any point. 6-1,
but I think people were still like, is this the best option?
I like seeing him out there smiling, though.
It's good vibes, okay?
It seems like, you know, the world is not, or all the walls in his world are not caving in on him right now, which is at least a positive.
Okay, the confidence level in George Springer and Whit Merrifield this past weekend, skyrocketing.
Big hit Whit.
George Springer just breaking out once again. Two home runs off McClanahan. It's just huge. Once again, being this heart and soul of this team, a guy that's clearly still battling an elbow that is subpar, to say the least. There's chips floating around in it. Mm-hmm. Whit Merrifield having that clutch 3-run home run in the seventh inning on Saturday night. Whit Merrifield is electric at the Trop.
Yeah.
He has the best numbers of like anybody in the history of the MLB at
yeah, why
the
are we
Trop.
Worried about the Trop? We got Whit Merrifield.
Yeah, so this is another reason that it doesn't matter about a home field advantage. You got just roll out Whit Merrifield to be in the cleanup spot. and you'll be fine. But he was very consistent this past week and getting put into positions that, you know, he's kind of that glue guy, right? He's not always in the lineup, and when he is, he's usually filling in for injury, or he's put in a position that isn't always where you would feel the most comfortable. But he deserves a lot of credit. And then obviously spark plug Springer, who's just been the leadoff guy of the league, who you can consistently count on. So those two guys deservingly a lot of credit for this past weekend.
I was taking a look at, cause this, you know, it's like, this is why you got George Springer, right? 100%. You got George Springer for, you know, you got him to get you to the playoffs, to give you those intangibles, the experience, obviously his bat and his defense, maybe taking slight steps back, but like, he's been here before. He knows how to get to the playoffs. He knows what to do when you're at the playoffs, when you're in the playoffs, rather. And just checking out his numbers, former World Series MVP, almost 300 plate appearances. I probably should have cross-referenced that to, like, how many plate appearances the entire Blue Jays lineup would have. But, I mean, the vast majority are belonging to George Springer. 300 plate appearances in the playoffs in Major League Baseball. It's he's got a wealth of experience, obviously. And, you know, I think that's something that we like. It's immeasurable, and it's something we build up to be more than it is. But with him, it just like feels so, so important to have him setting the and it's not just like, yeah, he's the fifth bat, or he's the best hitter, you know, or he's batting fifth or whatever. He sets the table literally every single time. He's the first one that's going to be up there. He's going to allow the team to feel more comfort than they would otherwise. At least that's the narrative I'm trying to spin. But like, I feel so confident when he's healthy, and I feel so, I'm like concerned if he's unavailable, if it's not going right, if his elbows are not what they need to be, because I just feel like his importance to this team in these big games down the stretch and when they get into the postseason, like, just so, so important.
He needs to be these next three games the George Springer that you just laid out. Consistent at the leadoff spot, a guy that is the leader on and off the field in this clubhouse, because as we mentioned, Aaron Judge coming to town looking for number 61. Blue Jays fans, over the next 3 days, text in 590-590. Is it going to happen? Part one, do you pitch to Aaron Judge? Part two, that is going to be the question that we watch for the next three games as well. Is that confidence level in Kevin Gausman tonight? Is he going to be the guy that goes for it? We set this up on Friday.
I think Gausman goes after him.
Goes after him. Okay. Mitch White to follow.
We'll see if those low leverage guys get in at any yeah. point and what happens. But
okay, so he hasn't been pitched to very often. Obviously, you know, he's been walked a lot over the last few games. Does it happen in Toronto? Do you pitch to Aaron Judge? How are you going to react if you see this moment of history here in Toronto? And if you're going, are you prepared to battle in full? I hope you wear full hockey equipment. I saw guys with goalie gloves in the stands. I guess they're prepared. So it's in three games, it's knowing his record, it's more likely than not that it'll happen here.
And the quality of pitcher that Judge is going to see, right? Like, and just the I think the opportunity is going to be there. So we think Gausman's going to go after him. Mitch White gets hit a lot. We know this. Jose Berríos gets hit a lot. We know this. I think he's going to have his opportunity in Toronto. I guess the question is, like, if it doesn't take away from what the Blue Jays are trying to do, which is secure home field, are you okay with it happening here?
That's a big,
like,
if.
It's kind of cool to see.
Oh,
history.
It's gonna be. It'll be amazing to see it here.
I think it would be. It would definitely be more special if you were there. Obviously,
well, I'll be there Tuesday, Looney Dogs.
That's the Mitch White star, right?
Man,
that's what we think.
It's gonna be good.
I mean, that's when that just $5 should be like save. You know, what do you have $10 set aside for Looney Dog? Maybe just eat five, use the other five on the Aaron Judge prop.
That's the come. Aaron Judge and the Yankees coming to town tonight after a late night could be a factor tonight when you're doing your wake and rake later. Okay, NFL week three. I've been trying to push this conversation off, Justin.
I've kind of picked
up on that. The Buffalo Bills. A tough one against the Dolphins last night or last afternoon. Kind of suck to start your day with that if you're sitting on the couch. Needed to go for a little walk in between games. There's a lot of things to break down about this game. Obviously, injuries. You can't control injuries. A lot of injuries. Guys were dropping like flies on that field. First of all, it looks miserable to play in Miami. Everyone's cramping up. Felt like me going up the stairs at my apartment. Calves cramping, having to lay down. Like, I did that a couple floors up. I get it. The heat, not a factor in my elevator shaft, but my staircases. But injuries, sure, we can play that card. We can play the heat as a card. We can play bad luck, a couple situations that...
Largely dominating the game, but not scoring. I mean,
100%.
If you... I don't know. Is there a deservometer like there is for the NHL and the NFL?
So.
I'm sure there is. If you look at the stats, certainly the Buffalo Bills deserve to win that game, but
they didn't. So your question here is, are we making excuses for the Bills after I lay out those three things?
I think we just did.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are facts.
You're not going to run the table. You're not going to go 17-0. You're going to run into adversity at a certain point. And clearly... that was not the best version of the Buffalo Bills. Bills that were being beaten down by the sun, down to, you know, reserves in their secondary, losing guys up front, losing guys during the game. There was some, maybe it was a mix, I think, of like the attritive aspects with the heat and just like poor play from the receiving core at certain points as well. But Josh Allen just made some mistakes. And
yeah.
I think one of the things, it reminded me not so much in that it was like, played at such a high level than the AFC Championship game last year. But, like, it felt like if Josh Allen wasn't going to do it, it wasn't going to happen. And that's what it felt like against Kansas City last year. And that's what it felt like in this game, where it was just like, okay, Allen has to do something because no one else is going to make a play.
Well, they had half a team of reserve practice squad players.
And that's fair. It's fair. I mean, if you maybe got a catch from Gabe Davis at a certain point to whatever. Like, there are things that you spot along the way. But... I also didn't like the play calling, and that's probably why Kenny Dorsey was absolutely losing his mind.
Holy smokes.
With one of the worst...
Hey, good for him, though.
One of the worst tantrums ever.
Yeah,
like,
he
was throwing papers around.
Okay, yeah, well, that's not going to make an impact. Like, you're tossing 0.1 gram
exactly.
items.
Exactly, so it looked really awkward. Like, if you're going to go full tantrum mode, you need, like, something
with
some girth to...
Anyway.
You know, whatever.
Okay, so... The biggest thing for me is now this is a trend that is concerning if you're a Bills fan.
Is it a trend?
Well, what I'm going to lay out.
Okay.
0-7 in the last one-score games. One-score games, the Buffalo
Bills. They haven't won a one-score game?
0-7
okay.
in the last one-score games. It's great when you can roll over teams by 20 points. They do that well. But when the game gets tight and there's a different game script and decisions need to be made... with more pressure, with more timeliness, they have failed to do that the last seven games. They've won 29 in a row of 10 or more points. That's great. But this is what that type of... That's like a playoff-type game mentality. When it's this tight of a score, you need to be able to adjust your game and your play to be able to pull out a tight game. And they have... not been able to do that.
I think you just nailed it there. I mean, they got down to the two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was it first and goal from the two?
I believe so.
And they just kind of, well, they got, I don't say they got away from the run game, but they could have just pounded it in. Like, if you just literally put Josh Allen behind center and push forward, lean forward four times in a row, it's going to end up in the end zone. It's going to end up in the end zone probably within a couple plays. But instead, they were rolling out and there was a little bit of, like, they're trying to make a 2-yard gain through a 12-yard pass and rolling out Allen and making a move around. Like, I just felt like they needed to simplify things, and instead it's like, let's have Josh Allen make an MVP play. And when guys are hurting and they're not 100% and they're just not moving the way they need to, Josh Allen included, it was probably better to go to the more simplistic approach. Again, this is nitpicking, though. We can't expect this team to go 17-0. This is a tough division loss against a very good team. Baltimore's next.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore, like the short, we thought, okay, the AFC is so good. There's so many good teams. Well, the Chiefs lost. The AFC West sucks.
Chiefs
There's no
lost,
one in the
eh?
AFC South.
It's nice.
Jacksonville's like, it's really the Bills, Miami, and Baltimore are the only teams that have kind of impressed. And the Ravens have been giving up a lot of yards. Like, they don't look perfect either. So it's not like they're, you know, the Bills are falling behind in any way. They have fallen behind in the division. I guess that's that. But still plenty of room to go. Miami's got to make a trip up north at some point, and that's going to be equally as difficult in terms of conditions. There you go. The Bills take back the Bills take back the division.
I don't like the conditions thing. Both teams are playing the same conditions.
But one team's more used to it.
Whatever. You're a pro.
One team practiced in it all, whatever, summer long. OTAs, off.
You don't think any of the guys on the Bills live in hot climates and practice in the summer?
I'm sure they do, but like, I don't know. When literally everyone is cramping up, if Stephon Diggs is cramping up and you don't have him for that final drive, it does mean something.
Of course.
And when they were dropping bodies and they already came in shorthanded, they mismanaged, I think, the situation slightly, and it ended up in a loss.
Speaking of dropping bodies, Tua.
Yes.
He gets clearly, I don't want to diagnose this guy.
Yeah, you can diagnose him.
He looked concussed the second that he stood up from that hit. Mm-hmm. He was wobbling around. He had to be like held up by his teammates, gets pulled out of that play, and enters the game shortly after. Now the NHL, or NHL, NFLPA.
It's usually this is an NHL discussion.
It feels like an NHL discussion. The NFLPA is doing an investigation on how he was allowed to continue that game.
Well, they tried to say it was a back injury, too.
No way. I have been concussed on the ice. I was knocked out unconscious on the ice. Mm-hmm. And I had to get stretchered to the hospital. Because I woke up from my getting knocked out, and I tried to get up, and no. Like, that's how I felt. I looked like that, probably. It was really concerning. It was the first thing I thought of. Why is this guy back in the game?
It was pretty shocking.
It was shocking.
And it kind of, like, he wasn't the Tua that we expect. Like, he made one huge play, which was kind of the difference in the game, that deep throw to Jalen Waddle.
But they're in trouble.
It was like game management mode after that for him. They clearly, I mean, I guess you could be protecting a back going to game management mode. But, like, yeah, this is an issue. You can't have these optics. You can't have a player stumbling around, crossing over his feet as he's trying to walk, held up by two teammates, holding his head, back on the field within 20 minutes.
It's a tough look. They're going to be under the microscope for this week. See how the NFLPA...
It won't matter, though.
No, it's like, not going to matter. It's football. Like, so tough it out. He's fine. He's... upper body injury, yeah, his head.
I mean, it might matter in the long run to Tua, but...
Yeah, I hope that he's fine. It's just...
This game will be decades in the past.
This game will be remembered for that, but also the butt punt.
I'm surprised it's taken us over a half hour for you to get to the butt punt.
That was the... Like, I sat on my couch and I rewatched that and cackled for... I don't know, 15 minutes. It was.
I mean, you're not human if you don't watch that slow-mo replay in life.
Unreal. That photo is going to hang that in the Louvre. Like, that was absolutely perfect timing. If you're that photographer, you can retire. Mm-hmm. Unreal moment. I just wish that they had capitalized on it. I mean, actually won that game. That would be the narrative is the butt punt ruined the Dolphins.
It actually worked in Miami's favor. Butt punt.
I know. Because maybe they're going to do that more
because
often.
Because I feel like they would have got way worse. Like, the 2 points didn't matter. Mm-hmm. I guess it would have mattered if the Bills were able to do something with the drive.
Oh, so funny.
But I feel like they would have got, you know, they would have had to score a touchdown in that sense. But that short field, that was the difference, was like the clock running out. And the butt punt, yeah, I'm going to say it. This butt punt helped the Miami Dolphins take the division lead over the Bills.
Will we see more butt punts? Justin Cuthbert's column. So AFC West shambles. Chiefs, Chargers, Raiders lose to AFC South opponents.
Denver did manage to win on, which was like one thing that we haven't talked about. That was just a terrible weekend of football, largely.
Boring.
Like, Bills, Miami was great, and that's why we started with, and that's why we belabored the point a little bit. But like, all these teams that we thought were good played awful. The division we thought was the group of death, they all suck. Like,
they all suck.
The Chiefs look like they're missing Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. They look like they're missing parts of that dynamic offense that once was. And the Chargers look awful with Justin Herbert clearly hurt. And if he's hurt for long stretches of time, then they're going to be in deep, deep trouble. And the Raiders were supposed to be good, and they're terrible. They're 0-3. And Denver did win.
They're the only 0-3 team in the NFL now.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. If you had, because I know that on Unibet and other betting sites, you can predict which the first or the last unbeaten team remaining is, I would not have chosen the Raiders.
The last team to win?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have either. They've probably had a bit of a difficult start. They played the Chargers, right? They played the Titans. I don't believe in the Titans at all. But still, we didn't expect them to be in the position they are. But they just look bad. Like, they don't look like they have anything on defense. And that partnership that Davante Adams and Derek Carr was supposed to have, it's not really producing much. They have no run game. I mean, it seems like they're completely lost. They're completely shot. And any team that, like, the AFC West, supposed to be great, looks bad. And Denver is maybe the worst team to watch in the world. Russell Wilson can't do anything on offense. They do have a good defense. But these games, that Sunday nighter was so, so boring. 11-10 the final, was it? Absolute snooze fest. It's really...
11-10.
And even this is, I think this is maybe most emblematic of the week and maybe the start of this NFL season, mm-hmm. is that the two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time played in the 4 o'clock slot. And I think the over under heading into the game was 43, and it hit the under comfortably. Like, so what are we missing here? Where are these offenses? Where are these high?
Well, we brought this up last week.
Where are those games that end up, you know, 45, 42? No. And are completely electrifying. Like, we haven't seen this in the NFL this year. It's been all about the unders. Mm-hmm. If you're someone who, you know, bets and cheers for boring games, you're profiting. But other than that, like, it's hard to get excited about what we saw on the weekend.
Well, we brought this up. We're like Friday, I think, setting up the weekend, I think, with Charles. Are you worried about the Bucs offense and, like, being able to score? Mm-hmm. I think after another week of this and seeing Tom Brady and his frustration, he got in trouble for slamming that tablet. See Aaron Rodgers, similar frustration. Some of these major veteran quarterbacks just feeling like they don't have the weapons or they don't have their level of play.
And they definitely didn't have the weapons.
Of course.
Both teams are pretty banged up.
But Tom Brady has done it without weapons before. He's put the team on his back, and he's found a way, and it's looking like a different Tom Brady.
And I believe the previous week they hadn't scored until the fourth quarter against mm-hmm. New Orleans. So they look a little bit different. Their defense looks really good, though. So if they can get some of those weapons back, Mike Evans, of course, will be back after his suspension. Chris Godwin will be back, you'd expect. There's probably better things ahead for teams like Tampa and Green Bay. Green Bay still doesn't have, you know, all the weapons in the world. They, of course, lost Davante Adams in the offseason. But it just seems like there are so few elite teams right now at the moment playing at the moment at a high level. Philly, still putting the Bills in that category. Miami certainly is there. The Ravens. But, like, can we count more than five that we think are playing really, really quality football right now? And maybe that's just typical in an NFL season where it's not set up right away. But right now, it's like, I even looked at week four. It's like, man, not many good games here. What's going on?
You want to touch on Leafs quickly?
Yeah, we're going to have Brent Gunning mm-hmm. on later. So we'll dive into more Leaf topics. But
we'll get to see the Leafs in action.
I think they're two standouts for the weekend. And you tell me if you agree. You're at both games. Cali Yarncroc, of course. Croak.
Kelly this Yarn is one Croak. Thing I'd like to just bring up. Cali Yarncroc. Cali Yarncroc. I have heard it.
It's Croak. I think I gave you something in the middle there.
I've heard
which
it.
Which is me hedging.
As a range of answers. We need just to solidify this.
Pretty sure it's Cali Yarncroc.
It's Croak.
Two goals playing with Austin Matthews. Interesting.
I mean, I could score two goals playing with Austin Matthews.
Yeah, maybe you could.
I mean, just he looks like Austin Matthews.
I don't want
Matthews
you to
like
invalidate
he's at another
my
level.
Point right away.
I just, yeah, anyway, continue.
And Ilya Samsonov looking pretty comfortable
in
goal for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. I think there's a possibility that Cali Yarncroc could mix up the top six mm-hmm. with the Leafs. And I'm not gonna stop hammering on the Tavares-Nylander incompatibility point. And if there's a way that you can mix it up so that Mitch Marner plays with John Tavares, would Cali Yarncroc, William Nylander, Austin Matthews be a terrible first line for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I like the idea of some
switching. Drop Bunting to mm-hmm. play with Marner and Tavares? That's a pretty good top six. Mm-hmm. Unless you have him earmarked for that wing position with David Kampf in a like a highly defensive shutdown line, so be it. That's great if that's what you prioritize. But I feel like there's an opportunity to mix him in there. And some immediate chemistry with Austin Matthews. Mm-hmm. It was a little awkward to see a guy who barely scored in Seattle, who didn't score in the regular season, I don't think at all,
Calgary.
Just, he's all of a sudden a shooter. And I think Sheldon Keefe said something about, yeah, that's an elite shot, or he's got an elite release. Like, I've never thought of that with Cali Yarncroke. But maybe there's something, there. There's something to at least explore, to chew on.
Something to chew on. Two other players that impressed Leafs Twitter. You know, everyone's analyzing the first two games. Adam Gaudette and Zach Aston-Reese impressing.
Yeah, to certain degrees, I would say. I don't know if they're going to, you know, they're the type of guys that we get really excited about that don't really offer much
in the end.
Because
it feels like you found a diamond in the rough.
Exactly.
And that's what Jason, that's what Leaf fans love.
Yes.
You saw that in Bunting. You see that in some players.
And
that
Bunting
don't
did provide a lot.
The
guy that steps in and allows Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner to have their best seasons in their careers. I mean, there's something that worked really, really well there. But I feel like with those guys, we're getting excited about them because they're been given the most opportunity. So I feel like they're the front runners to grab open spots for Sheldon Keefe because they've been put in this position right away. Gaudette played in a top six role, and Zach Aston-Reese played a ton of minutes and looks like he'll be a focal point when he's out there. And of course, he's on a PTO. So you have to give him those minutes and you have to give him a chance to earn his spot. So those were maybe the four that seemed to at least
it's pretty
jump
good
off
to
the,
get
jump off
four storylines and a preseason.
And they're because
start.
They're new guys.
Yeah.
And they're first impressions. And I think overall, all four of them had good first impressions.
We'll talk to Brent Gunning, who was there, host of Leafs Nation Sports at 590 The Fan at 7:30. We're going to talk to Tim Leeper at 7, and then our guy Ross Tucker at 8. Roger Federer played his last ever match. Devastating to watch. So many tears were shed from those guys. Beautiful, though, to see that friendship, that rivalry be so important to tennis. I'm sure we'll sprinkle in some of that moving forward. And then Canada and Qatar. Canada with a huge win, part of the Wake and Rake on Friday.
Yeah, we won the final two-leg Wake and Rake. And that means we're going back to three legs. And
100%.
I guess to start the A-list, we'll let you know what you have to do to be involved.
We'll let
there.
You know what's next for our Wake and Rake changes. Stay tuned for that. We're going to do the A-list next. I'll take a break now. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish this morning. Happy Monday, everybody. Big week of Blue Jays baseball ahead. Tonight is an important night and the debut of our new Wake and Rake where you are involved. So Justin and I have been doing a two-leg parlay. We would like to make it a three-leg parlay and we'd like to source your bets now for the 8:30 block where we will be selecting one lucky gambler to join our parlay, and we will be analyzing your submissions, and your submissions must be about tonight's Blue Jays-Yankees game.
Now, is it Blue Jays-Yankees? Because we have a Monday night game.
Or could it be against Monday Night Football then, too?
Now, so
something that we're going to be watching. Don't pick, like, Guardians and
yes,
Astros.
The whole point is we want to anchor. This is going to be the anchor. We want to anchor our parlay in the games that you will be watching. So you'll be betting on these games. You'll be more interested in the game that you're going to watch. Of course, we don't want to force you to watch the San Diego Padres late at night because your submission is from the San Diego Padres game. We want it to be from the games that matter to fans in Toronto. So that is probably, in this case, Toronto and the New York Yankees at Rogers Center. It could be the primetime football games. We'll probably break that down, and it's more likely that we'll take from the Yankees and Blue Jays. But it's the game that matters, which we want to anchor the parlay in. And I guess you guys really decide which game matters. So send your submissions in on your best bets from the game that matters tonight. That is more likely than not Blue Jays.
590, 590 on the text line. You can send a tweet or a DM to Justin and myself. We're going to cut that off around 8 because we want to 8:15. We want to be able to look at it during that 8 6:30 break, so we're ready to select you. Put your name and location. We want to know who you are so we can have you a part of this Wake and Rake journey as the anchor. So send that in this morning. If you're listening on the podcast, you'll have a little bit of time as well. Let's do the A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Fan of the show. Guest of the show. Someone that I've spoken to in the A-list hour before. Predicted something just outstanding. I don't know if I believe in like mediums and fortune tellers. But Greg Amsinger, mm-hmm. who's an MLB Network host, said something that is a bit spooky.
Okay.
This was back a very long time ago in April, for context. Here's the clip.
Albert's going to play so much more than people think. He is. He's a draw, and he's going to be productive. He will reach 700 career home runs. I do have bad news, Cardinal fans. I have bad news. He's going to hit a 700th career home run on the road.
And only fitting it'll be in Wrigley, right?
No. Friday night in Los Angeles in September of Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, man, that's okay? Crazy. So
that's when it's going to happen against his former teammate. Hall of Famer versus Hall of Famer. It'll be on the road.
I can't wait to see it.
He predicts that out of an entire season of baseball, to hit this historic 700th home run, Albert Pujols was going to hit it Friday night in Los Angeles in September against Clayton Kershaw. Erase the Clayton Kershaw factor, and he did all of those things.
I mean, he was one step away from immortality. Like,
that's still immortality. That's something.
Clayton will always be in that, though. It's still ridiculous. Months ago. And this was a stretch that Albert Pujols would get to this point. Yeah. Like even a couple months ago, like the odds were very, very long for him to get to this milestone this season.
The end of July, he had only hit 7 home runs this season.
And he goes on this huge run.
21.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
That's why, and we're going to do it on this show, we're going to do bold predictions for, we'll do bold predictions for the Raptors, certainly for the Leafs. And we'll get really, really specific in an effort to
have
one
moment.
Of these clips back to be featured on the A-list. That's ridiculous.
I mean,
that's the thing. It's like you talk as much as Greg Amsinger has to do with the MLB Network, right? That eventually you're going to nail a few of these. But that was awesome, though. That's beyond nailing it, yeah.
It was pretty cool to see his 700th home run as well. I think we predicted that between that and Aaron Judge, I thought that the 700th home run would happen first. It happened. I think it's much more important, and we had this debate too, and harder to reach than Aaron Judge's 62 home run.
It is just that, like, I was like, no, I don't know if it is.
I think
they're equally, though, because he's the second, and Judge is going to be, I guess the second in the American League to get to 61-62. So I feel like they're going to be more in the 700 club eventually, but I was shocked that he was only the second. That's amazing.
Incredible.
And just like that says something about his longevity, because Pujols is an all-time great, future Hall of Famer. But would I say he's the second best home run hitter in league history? I probably wouldn't have. I definitely wouldn't have said that. It's remarkable that he's reached that. And a remarkable call from Amsinger.
Yeah, hopefully we're clipping some of these bold predictions, because I want that to be a legacy that we have immortalized forever, because we predict that.
So super specific when we do this in a few weeks.
Okay, so other important news this weekend. Rihanna performing at the NFL Super Bowl halftime show this year. There were some rumors it'd be Taylor Swift, speculation.
I saw that.
I was excited about that. They were looking for a female headliner, and I believe a lot of people drew the connection to Taylor Swift. She actually turned it down because she wanted to record her first 6 albums first. She's prioritizing that. She's, you know, having her new era.
Record her what? First 6?
She's like re-recording her albums.
Oh, right.
Because of that whole drama. Yes. So she turned it down, and Rihanna will be headlining this year's Super Bowl with special guest to be announced, so keep that in mind. Text in 590-590, first of all. Your favorite halftime show that you've seen, / who you would want to perform moving forward at a halftime show, because this is the way it goes. It's the headline conversation moving forward. Apple bought the rights because it used to be the Pepsi halftime show. Now it is the Apple Music halftime show. Mm-hmm. At least $250 million has been spent to buy the rights here.
Oh, wow.
Just to have your name attached.
A little bit more than the dairy farmers can get this one.
Just presented by Milk. Just have your name attached as the halftime show branding is going to be around that much money. Pretty incredible. So who would you want to perform? Dustin.
I don't know. I mean, if I was, gun to my head, I got to pick one. I think the Chili Peppers would be great. I don't even know if the Chili Peppers have done it.
They're not big enough.
But they're not big enough. What do you mean they're not big enough?
I don't think they'd be big enough right now.
Maybe not right now. They probably should have done it, 10 years ago. But we're entering our prime for this because, what we had last year with Dr. Dre, Eminem, mm-hmm. Snoop Dogg, now we're into Rihanna. We're getting to the point where it's like, I think they're trying to get more folks who are active and at the top of their careers right now.
Except
I guess
for last year,
but again, with the exception of last year. But last year was great for people mm-hmm. our age, and
lost it
on people 20, 25 years older than us. So I feel like these are going to be more relevant for us coming up. But still, I feel like the list gets a little bit shorter. I'm all for Rihanna. Rihanna will be great. Rihanna will have awesome guests, I assume. And that's what I like. Let's just have five or six and give us mm-hmm. your best. Give us the best from this artist, best from this artist. And it all works together. I think that's when the halftime show is at its best. Otherwise, it's just it kind of drags on a little bit. I don't have a good answer, though.
I think that we'll see if future Harry Styles does the halftime show. He's huge right now.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's a younger audience, but maybe the NFL's going to try to gear towards a younger audience. He's a great performer. You saw how millions of people were lining up for all of his tours around the world. Maybe not right now, but I could see a future with Harry Styles. I could also see Drake. If The Weeknd did it, I could see Drake doing it with a couple special guests as well.
Yeah, I'm surprised Drake hasn't done it yet. I mean, that would obviously be a big deal if Drake did it.
I have one more. What about a Blink, Sum 41?
That's what I was thinking.
Good Charlotte, Green Day, Billy Talent. Think about that era of music. Put them all together. That'd be amazing.
So many people would be so happy with that.
It'd be awesome.
So many people would hate it, too. Well,
it's too bad.
Anyone 20 or younger would absolutely despise it. And I'd be all for that because it's not about them.
Keep it coming, 590-590. Text in your best picks for a halftime show and ones that you've liked in the past. We'll sprinkle that in throughout today's show. And also keep your Wake and Rake picks coming. We're going to take a break and talk to Tim Leeper. How's this week rank in terms of Blue Jays' importance all season long? That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ayler, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.